Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to SightAndVisionRadio.com presents the Ecumenical Health Council Report, a show about healthy living and healthy eating. Everything you want to know, you don't know, and you need to know about health. A one-stop shop for your healthy mind, your healthy body, and your healthy spirit. And here to introduce our dynamic duo of health is our hostess, Miss Renee.
Well, Reverend Radio Ray, one of the things we love about technology is how it connects us to people all over the world. One of the things we hate about technology is that sometimes it doesn't work perfectly. And today is one of those days. It does not seem to be working perfectly. So we've got a little bit of a glitch. So we're going to have a moment while we hot mic our guests. So let's turn this mic on. And welcome. Who do we have on the line?
Ray Smith.
All right,
Commissioner. Okay. We've already started a couple of minutes, and so we were waiting for you. So let's do a proper introduction. The Ecumenical Health Council is heard every fourth Friday on Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Presents. The Ecumenical Health Council is one part of a collaborative that is committed to advancing healthier practices in the faith community. And today, our guests are Commissioner Ray Smith, Chair of the Ecumenical Health Council, and Holly Foster, nutritionist and certified physical fitness trainer. Welcome.
Thank you. Good help. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Now, I think most of us have heard the old joke about the blind person helped across the street by a Boy Scout. A bystander comments, "Oh, that was awfully nice that he helped you across the street." "Well, it could have been," responds the blind person, "except I didn't want to cross the street." So today our topic is blind etiquette, how to best interact with a person who is blind or low vision. And while I check the board, Reverend Radio Ray, can you also greet our guests while I just check on the board for a moment?
Sure. So I want to once again welcome Commissioner Coach Ray Smith back to these airwaves that we have the pleasure of interacting with him and the Ecumenical Health Council to share information with us about our status of our health and our community and how to make it better and the things that we need to do physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So, Coach, how do you view what our health condition is among people across the board, the black community, and in our case of you having a disability, me having a disability, and being blind, our disability community?
I would actually have to say in terms of the health perspective in itself that we're moderate to poor. In terms of what we've been doing to take care of ourselves, we really have not. Some of us have been sort of excluded from things, but then the other piece is, you and I both realize this, that a lot of times we have people who are not capable of traveling comfortably, and so they're not actually have the mobility perspectives in place properly so that they can continue to, do the things that they need to do in order for them to work out or to go places or ski or run or, the different aspects of health.
Now, this
okay,
past,
well, let me,
Go ahead. You're back with us, Ms. Renee.
Go ahead. Do your follow-up.
No, my follow-up was just going to be that I know this week a church, a faith-based church, Woodstream, had a event where they was where they was showing and exhibiting persons with disability across the board, and I know that Commissioner Coach and some of the blind cohorts of his participated. So, Coach, can you just tell us a little bit about that that event?
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. One of the biggest components that they were dealing with was the mental capacity persons, in our community, how the concept of engaging with the, community or the particular patrons, different initiatives, whether it be education, whether it be employment, whether it be, the health, all areas were really covered. Then, of course, we had the blind community there as well and the deaf community. So you had sort of a nice plethora of persons with disabilities that were there. And the biggest piece was the spiritual aspect of it, not only just where it was located, but what was being promoted. People that came in felt greeted. They were loved on. They took very good care of it, but then the information was being provided to our community was absolutely excellent.
Well, let me just follow up on that with a couple of questions, Ms. Renee, before we get off, just because I'm impressed, and I think it's way overdue that, because, one of my pet peeves, Reverend Ray pet peeves, was the black churches sort of turning a, and pardon the expression, a blind eye to the disability community and within their church. And so I'm glad to see that Woodstream is, as a church, has had this event. And I want to ask Coach, do you find that more and more that faith-based entities as well as churches, especially in the black community, are starting to recognize that they have this invisible community that their families attend their churches, but yet they do not make it conducive or inviting to their disability family members?
Well, what you're finding is that people are starting to kind of understand what has been missing. And I think a lot of it just comes because a lot of organizations have really started sort of impacting the communities, because it's happening to the very heads of those churches. You have pastors, you have ministers and other persons who are now suffering through some of those aspects, mainly because of their health. We know that all this stuff is generated by our lack of prevention regarding the health, even though you have some children and adults who have actually been dealing with this since birth. But the point is that all this has everything to do with health. So this aspect of it is really starting to become to fruition, and this is nationwide, not just in our community. It's nationwide. And Mr. Razor, I think you already know, Reverend Razor, I think you already know that the archdiocese in our country have always been in a position to support or initiate activities pertaining to this, and we're starting to pick the mantle up. I'm talking about our black churches and other denominations of churches. They're starting to pick up the mantle now.
Okay, just one other question, then we're going to turn it over to the our hostess, Ms. Renee. One other question is how, because people always want to know, how well attended, and I want to use that well because I'm optimistic, how well attended was this event?
Almost like standing room only. At one point, I was wondering whether or not we were going to, and next thing I know, this place was flooded. I mean, you had people just migrating in. People were coming in and coming out, but people were coming out, and I'm hearing these folks talking about how wonderful this program was and how much information they were able to get, but it was very well attended, very well attended.
So it was a lot of interest, and a lot of people took away a lot of information. That's
absolutely
great.
And also just to be able to network with other families that they're seeing that the same things that was happening with them are happy with other families. So they have a lot to share with each other.
So they realize as the biggest thing, they are not alone and there's hope.
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
All right. Mr. Knight, we're going to turn it. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, Mr. Razor, one of the things that's very prevalent with all of this is that, you know, 2 months ago when we had the ADA celebration in July, it really kind of kick-started a lot of this activity because everybody, because you and I were at an event where I think we were pretty surprised with the amount of people who were in the room sharing information and had the same concepts that we have.
Yes. And you know, in the celebration of the 26th year of the signing of the American Disability Act, I think it did re-spark, because it was sparked there, re-sparked a lot of people in the disability community movement, and it's just that gave us a jump start again to really start getting out and making people aware of the disability plight, and I call it plight because there's a lot of work undone, and we're going to be doing a lot in the next month of October, which is Meet the Blind Month and celebrating disability awareness employment. So stay tuned for
exactly.
that. But Mr. Renee, back to you and all your research.
I want to build on what you and the commissioner have been talking about, because today our topic is blind etiquette, how to best interact with a person who is blind or low vision. And now etiquette has become an old-fashioned word, and as I was searching for a term, ground rule just seemed a little too glib. So we're just going to unpack considerate behavior toward persons who are blind and low vision. So, Commissioner, let me begin here. What is the proper term to refer to a blind or low vision person? And how does one learn which word is preferred?
Well, I mean, again, I think it has a lot to do with person's preference. They'll tell you visually impaired is the word that people are using. You know, my perspective is that there's nothing impaired about my vision. I'm blind.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to be, plain and simple. I think that there are people who have impairments, and that means that your vision is damaged to a point where you maybe have some sense of sight. But if you're completely blind, you're completely blind. And, of course, you know, they use that terminology as impairment as sort of a soft way, you know, to pretty much identify people being blind.
Yeah. So in a sighted world, how is one to learn how to refer to a person who's blind or low vision? How does a person find out what that person's preference is?
Well, I mean, you have to do the ask. You know, a lot of times what we find, we find that people are negligent with asking the question because they think it's inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, we've heard this saying back in the day that, you know, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. So you need to ask an engaged person.
Yeah.
You have to engage persons with, you know, if there's something you need to know, you ask the question.
Well, okay,
and,
well, let me follow up on that. Then why is it important to refer to the person and then the disability? The person has a disability as opposed to the disability and the person. Why is that important?
Because the disability does not define the person. First of all, remember, we're part of the human race. We're not part of the blind race. Mm-hmm. We're not part of the deaf race. We're part of the human race. And we're persons and humans first. With the disability, that just comes with a sort of a tag on you. But it helps to identify with who you are, and it doesn't completely identify you. But it's just a portion of it. I mean, think about this. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I wanted you to complete your thought.
Yeah, no, I was saying, I mean, you think about this. We have people who are attorneys and people who are engineers, and these people have disabilities. whether they're deaf, whether they're blind, or what have you, you know, what comes first? Blind engineer or engineer who's blind?
I got you. Now, Commissioner, our opening tongue-in-cheek example referred to a person who is blind being escorted across the street when that is not what they wanted. Now, I want you to answer this on the other side of the break, but how should a sighted person assist? Wait to be asked or offer assistance? So right after we pay some bills so Reverend Radio Ray can increase my salary, I'll have you answer that question for me. Okay, you are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability and Senior Talk Radio presents on blogtalkradio.com, the Marketing Pulpit Network. We are heard live every Friday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time and on demand. This show is produced by Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Our guest is Commissioner Ray Smith, Chair of the Ecumenical Health Council of the Port Towns in Prince George's County, Maryland. And I am your host, Renee Sewell Razor. Okay, Coach, I think that ought to get me up into the top 1% anyway. All right, so the question I ask is,
how should a person ask
about assistance? Sir?
Well, first of all, you know, if a sighted person wants to help someone, you have to do the ask. You just don't walk up and invade someone's space because you don't know what kind of response you may get from those individuals. I've seen situations where people who want to help somebody walk across the street, and the person is standing on the corner, and understand this. A person who's getting ready to walk across the street, there's several things that they're doing. First of all, they're engaging with sound. They're listening for traffic patterns. The next thing that they're doing is they're getting what they call placement and alignment so they can walk properly across the street. While you're doing that, there's a matter of concentration. All of a sudden, someone comes up and says, hey. And sometimes they're putting their hands on you because they will let you walk out the street.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, what you've just done as a sighted person, you've actually infringed on these person's personal space. If you were walking towards them and say, oh, hi there, hey, can I help you? Then you can pretty much, as a blind person, you would be able to now engage with those persons. But then there's another point. If you say to them, no, I'm okay, I won't need your assistance, they sometimes become persistent. So now you have to learn how to disengage with them. And that's one of the important parts, engaging and disengaging with your general public. Because, again...
Okay, now, Commissioner, granted, many sighted people have limited interaction with blind and low-vision persons, which is why we're educating them today. Speak to the phenomenon... you talk about engagement and disengaging. Speak to the phenomenon of talking to a sighted guide and ignoring the person who is blind.
Well, again, you know, I've actually have had personal experience of that, where someone wants to grab me and take me across the street. After I've told them I'm okay, I know what I'm doing, they still want to take me across the street. Well, I have to now be firm and bold. Stop. You don't put your hands on a person. The other thing is, like, for instance, how often, and Mr. Razor, I think you've actually experienced this, how often have you had somebody, if you had a cane, they grab your cane to help guide you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, again, that's an infringement. You're basically like grabbing somebody's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. You know, you don't grab a person's cane. You never grab a person's cane. If you want to give them help, you give them direction. And all this is descriptive and verbal. Unless they tell you they would need your assistance, then then you have to also teach them the concept of how you're going to, you grab them. They don't grab you. You have to take their arm. Because if they're taking your arm, then you're leading them. I don't think they really
want
that.
A little bit. Right, exactly. Uh-huh. Let's broaden this a little bit. Have you had an experience with, say, in a restaurant or handling banking business or something, and you have a sighted guide, but it's your business, that the person helping you disengages from the blind person or from you in particular? Have you had that experience?
Yeah, but see, here's the other thing. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting thing is, your cane gives you so much information. Plus, you still have the sense of hearing, feeling, but your cane gives you information. If you hit something hard, you understand it's a table or it could be a chair, or if you hit something soft, you know someone's foot, what have you. And generally, most blind persons are, if they're hitting something that's soft, they're pretty much excusing themselves. You'll pardon me.
And coach, share with us, because I run into this often. When you're going to take care of some business or something and you have someone with you that's sighted, and the person that you know, you're paying your bill or something, instead of talking to you, they say, well, what do you think that he want, or does he want this, and just totally ignore you. How do you handle that? I have my way to handle it. How do you handle that?
What I would then, you know, I will, interject with them, and I'll let them know that I am the person who is in need, that, you know, in some cases I've been really hard on them. Because one of the things that happens is they already see you there. But here's the reason why they don't deal with you, Mr. Razor, is because they can't see your eyes.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Well,
your eyes are sort of the aspect of your life. You know, you see people's souls through your eyes. Now all of a sudden you can't see that person's eyes. You don't think it's appropriate for you to deal with them.
So they're not looking at
that's,
you.
Wow.
That's our sighted world. They pretty much realize that, you know, they're looking at your eyes.
They're conditioned that if this person not looking at you, then they not engaged with you. So they turn to the person that does have that seeing and say, well, what
that's
does
exactly
this person
right. Think about this.
Yeah.
When we were taught as children, when you engage with someone, if you give someone a handshake, they are telling you, shake that person's hand and look them in their eyes.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Right?
I never thought of
that. That's
just
a common situation that we have to face.
Hmm. Wow.
But we have to then educate.
Okay, Commissioner.
Yes.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we have to educate our general public about things like that. And usually, if
you've
given it to them in love,
it's a cultural thing also, because in this culture, children are taught to look at an adult. There are other cultures when children are speaking to an adult or adult is speaking to them, correcting them or addressing them, the child looks away as a way of deference. But I had not thought about that. That's a good explanation of what you're offering. But it is cultural.
As a person with a vision impairment or blind or what have you, you have to then talk to your general public with care, with boldness, but you talk to them in love. Because when you start talking to them with a derogatory perspective or characteristic, then what you've done is you're starting to create animosity. And that's what a lot of times.
Okay, let me jump in here because, of course, we're up against time. What should a sighted person say when a blind or low vision person is in danger?
Well, they should.
There's no time for niceties.
Right. Well, no. What you say is, listen, you know, if somebody, you walk out in the street and they're not realizing there's a car coming which has a, you know, has a, you know, has a no, you know, engine that's quiet, then generally, instinctively, you're going to stop that person, whether you're going to put your hands on them or not. you basically then you still need to alarm them that you're getting ready to walk out in the street and there's a car getting ready to turn the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you see them getting ready to walk into a door, you know, allow them to use their cane because that's what they're looking for. Their cane is that used for that purpose. But if you see somebody you know that they're going to be very well harmed, then you should basically identify that with the individual. They'll appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you know, you have such a short window and the brain is engaging so quickly. I know that, you know, the question is, if you see a person and you're fearful that they're going to be hurt, and I understand using the cane as getting information, but I think your example is excellent. When these silent cars are turning right on red or something else, you know, how does a sighted person warn a blind or low vision person in just a nanosecond, basically,
right.
You know, that they are in danger and still wanting to be respectful? We are up against the clock, but I have one more question. Sighted guides are oftentimes edit things out when they are describing for a person who's blind or low vision. If a person is describing someone, let's say that they're unkempt or they look like they live on the street, should that be included in a description for a blind or low vision person?
Absolutely. I mean, because basically the truth is the truth. You know, I mean, what would basically discourage you from giving someone the truth if it's necessary? I mean, you know, again, look at our human factors. Go ahead. Were you going to say?
No, Reverend Ray has noted that some sighted guides edit information out. And, you know, you have to be mindful of editing things on behalf of a person who's blind or low vision. So I wanted to get your feedback on that, you know, how much information should we get. But before I turn this back over to our producer, Reverend Radio Ray, if a listener wants more information, Commissioner, about the Ecumenical Health Council, where can they get additional information?
They can call myself. Which is sort of, if I'm not available, just leave me a message. But the number is 240-510-5883. And again, that's Commissioner Ray Smith. And if there was a question for, say, Pastor Duvall or Holly Foster, or, you know, we could pretty much just, you know, be able to sort that out and we'll send that information to them. That way that person will be directly in contact with them.
Okay, that number again is 240-510-5883. Reverend Radio Ray, you've got 90 seconds. I know you have a couple of questions for the commissioner.
Yeah, we have a couple of emails from our listening audience and coach, and just real quick. They want to know, and this is from a waitress, she had an encounter with a blind person that came in and was alone to eat, and she didn't know how to assist him as far as cutting his food up or telling him where it was at on his plate. So what is the thumb rule to that?
Well, regarding the concept of using a plate, you pretty much give it an analog clock. You pretty much identify your noon, your 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, okay, which identifies places on your plate. Now, but regarding if someone wanted to help cut, I mean, it's just pretty much that simple. But you have to ask the person if they would like that help. Some persons who are blind don't need that help.
Okay.
That's
a good question to answer. Then we have another listener from BG County wanted to know is the responsibility of a person that's blind, if they're going to be going to a place regularly, should they educate the people of their needs, to show them where the bathroom, how to help them to a seat? Is it on that blind person to educate the people that he's going to be around all the time?
Absolutely. Grocery store, perfect example. You go into a grocery store, I've always told my constituents, call the store ahead and let them know that you're coming. To me, that's a sign of respect. They will then know that you're coming, so they're looking out for you. They'll have
okay.
a person in place to be able to help you once you actually get
okay.
to a location. And then you pretty
okay.
much kind of give them directions. They'll give you directions, but you give them directions
okay.
on what it is you want, instructions
okay,
on what
well
you
we,
want.
Okay, we hear the music, and we wanted to acknowledge a special prayer for Ken Williams' family. Ken Williams passed today in an accident, and we want to put in prayer his wife, Diane, and his family, and a good friend of Coach's and mine's, and I just want to ask all of this in order to keep his family in prayer. And thanks a lot, Coach. Until next month, this is Reverend Ray, and I like to say, I might not have sight, but I can have vision. God bless and be blessed.
God's be blessed as well. Thank you.
Thank you. All righty.
So we're done?
We're done.
Okay.
Okay. All right.